I'm going to open a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5046. We are going to finish, we're in the legislative branch agencies, we're going to finish legislative council, and then hear from legislative fiscal, legislative revenue, and the Commission on Indian Services. And we know that Representative Butler will be joining us for the Commission on Indian Services, and I would like to be respectful of his time when he comes and bring him forward right away. So with that, we'll invite Mr. Hendricks back up. And we had succeeded in interrupting you so many times yesterday. Before you begin, I also am going to ask our professional staff if you have any guiding wisdom or comments to help us as we begin our day today.
Chair and committee members, just to indicate that once these agencies get done presenting today, we will prepare work session documents for you. And whichever committee or committees that comes back to, we will be building on the discussion and the concerns that you guys are expressing yesterday and today when we go back to work with leadership and the co-chairs. Dave will have to be fairly brief today to get to the last three agencies on our list today. But I think there's still plenty of time.
Good. Well, with that, please begin.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, good morning. Dave Hendricks, Acting Legislative Counsel. I really got through a big portion of the presentation yesterday anyway, so I'll try to be brief today. I am working from this particular document, and I'm looking at tab 2, which is where our key performance measures were. And the actual chart of our performance measures are the last two pages under that tab, where we have it in the form that LFO has been using on laying out the performance measures. This is a new exercise for us. We have not done this in the past. I suspect it's going to be an evolving exercise. These were things that we could come up with fairly short notice since we weren't aware that we would be doing this, but I suspect that we'll be revisiting this during the interim to look at some other possibilities for things we might do. Listening to Dave Henderson yesterday, I heard a couple of theirs that sounded pretty good. Might want to look at those as options as well. We have put a lot of other things under this tab just to show kind of what we're doing already in the way of quality control and tracking numbers. We do a lot of tracking already in our office because of the high volume of paper that we handle. The first few pages under the tab, for instance, shows the printouts that we do based by requester that allows us to keep track. Requester, this should look kind of familiar to you because these are the sort of printouts that you get if you ask what do I have in legislative council at any given time. What it doesn't show you is the rest of our system, docket system, which allows us to take any of the items that you might see on this list and track it down to the exact person in the office who has it in their hands at any given moment. That system has worked very, very well. We went to an electronic over the last couple of biennium, and it has been a very successful product. The other thing that I would point out is shortly thereafter is a one-page thing that identifies our peer review process. This was a very important quality control within the office. It essentially is the mechanism whereby we have drafters looking at other drafters' work during the interim and during the agency drafting period to try to make sure that we don't forget things, and that we don't. We always are learning from each other through this process. It's been very successful. It helps newer drafters and older drafters rethink those rules, all those complicated rules we have, and make sure we're still following them, and that we're producing the best quality product that we can. Especially as we get into session, we don't have time to do that sort of review. We do it primarily during the the agency drafting period when we have enough volume to get drafts to look at, but not too much, which is the case once we get into session. The other things I'd point out in there are I have several of these colored pages, which are the checklist used by our copy editors. One of the things that people don't realize, I think, outside our office is that we're not just about getting the drafts out. we have our within our publication services department, they handle, for instance, last biennium, they actually handled 14,000 work orders. And among those were the drafts. There were also the amendments. There were also the introductions. There were also the engrossings. There were also the enrollings. And each of those go through a very complicated process in which several people handle those things and go through these checklists to make sure that we've done everything to try to be as sure as humanly possible that when we get to the end of the process and we have an enrolled bill going to the governor that we don't have errors. We do not have errors. And some of our performance measures are aiming at that, trying to avoid errors. So looking at the key performance measures in the last two pages, some of the things we'll be looking at will be just tracking. Part of our problem is that we have no control on the amount of work coming in. So tracking is difficult. I mean, you can't look at any given session and say, well, you did X number more drafts, or you did X number of drafts faster, because every single draft is so different that, you know, it can be a, well, we want to change one word in a statute, or it can be, you know, we want to rewrite land use laws. And trying to even do an average sometimes is deceptive, it seems to me. But some of the things we'll be looking at is we will be looking at trying to identify the number of things that turned out to have been errors that we identify as we go through that compilation process after session that I talked about yesterday. We do that anyway. We right now, as we go through the editing process and we see problems that were created during the session, we already do these things called special attention notes, which is our way of making sure that we're alerted that there's a problem that needs to be addressed at some point. We will keep track of those things that we write that arise out of the previous session, and we'll see how we do over time about trying to eliminate errors that we should have caught during session, because usually those are the sort of things that we can identify and we can track and we can keep a numerical listing of it. The third item down is relates to peer review, which I already addressed. We basically try to keep us hitting 100% of peer review for those drafts that are done before August 1st of the even numbered years. If we can do that, I think that will be a big go a long ways towards making sure that we have the quality and that the drafters keep up to speed with respect to all of the rules. The only issue on that will create problems is if we have lots of special sessions. Because once we start talking about doing, if we do five special sessions in an interim, that particular measure will suffer. That would just be one of those things that would be outside our control. On the next page at the top, we're looking at tracking the number of reprints required to correct LC errors. We're looking at the length of time between adjournment and actually shipping the ORS. That's under our ORS publication program. Again, getting that out to the folks. The number of compilation and proofing errors discovered in ORS. And then finally, I'd mention the survey, which I suspect that all we're going to have for all legislative agencies, and a lot of these relate to that and how we're doing with our customers, both the legislators, the agencies that we draft for, and we'd also be looking at getting feedback from the people who buy the ORS from us about how they feel about how we're doing. I can talk more about those. Or
I think that's fine. One of the questions that I had that I didn't see reflected here, and maybe you can fine-tune it for me, is the amount of time between a legislative request of your office and the time that the drafting is done. And I know that's very hard to measure, because some of it might be the reorganization of the Department of Human Services, which could take just slightly less than a lifetime to do, and another might be just a little quickie amendment. But in some cases, it's been a little hard to tell where a draft is in the queue. Mm-hmm. And it's been triggered based on when a hearing is set. and that seems to put an additional burden on the rest of the building because hearings aren't set until the drafting is done, but the drafting isn't done until the hearing is set. And I think that that has caused a little tiny bit of confusion.
Chair Johnson, I would hope that I usually try to get people to specify a due time on amendments because you're correct. You do get into a loop with respect to, you know, say when you say it's due, we'll schedule a hearing when we get the amendments, and then the fear is, well, that will go to the bottom of the pile. I do try to encourage folks to set a due date rather than just saying that because obviously with target dates for committees now, don't have till the end of session to do some of these things. Some of these committees will be shutting down. So it is a concern when we had some problems with that earlier this session. I'm hoping that that particular designation won't be used as much as I saw used this session.
Are you hoping to pick that those issues up in the survey results, or did you give any thought to a performance measure that says time elapsed between drafting request and finished product?
We talked about it a little bit. I know there were some concerns about that performance measure. It's one of those that I think we will be looking at during the interim as a possible additional one. It would have to be an average, and once again, because we have so little control over the complexity of what comes in,
sure.
It's one of those, again, that will be driven in a large part by what we get asked to do.
Sure. Okay.
Tab 3 has our prioritization. It's difficult for us to do that sort of breakdown within our office because we don't really, per se, have programs when you look at it. We have a fairly single objective with respect to the performance that we do. But we did break it down in a way, and obviously down at the bottom are some of the other things that we do within the office, including the Law Commission, obviously the policy packages that we had in the original proposal. And then finally, Tab 4 has the detail of the 10% reduction that all agencies were required to do. And I'd be happy to address that if the chair wants me to talk about the specifics of that. I was just saying, Chair Johnson, if you want me to discuss the detail of the reduction under Tab 4 for the 10% reduction of the governor's thing, I'd be happy to do that, or if you...
I think the consensus is that we can read the material here, and any questions for Mr. Hendricks? I think with that, we would thank you for your presentation. The one thing that I do want to touch on just to make sure that we've, and that's what I was consulting with the professional staff about, was the Oregon Law Commission. I know they're here in the audience, and early in the session had a policy package that I understand now will be withdrawn. Why don't we invite you up and just get this piece on the record?
Thank you, Chair Johnson, and thank you, committee, for the opportunity to make the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Because you're really not anticipated on the agenda, I'm going to move through this pretty quickly.
Thank you, Chair Johnson, and members of the committee. My name is David Kanagi. I am Associate Dean at the Willamette University College of Law, located right across the street, and also serve as Executive Director of the Oregon Law Commission. In that capacity, I work with Legislative Council at
I'm going to stop you for just a second.
Yes.
Anne-Marie was out of the room just briefly, and I want to make sure she gets the spelling of your name correctly for the record, if you wouldn't mind repeating that.
Not at all, Chair Johnson. Thank you. My last name is spelled K-E-N-A-G-Y.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you for this opportunity just to briefly bring you current. The Oregon Law Commission was created in 1997 by statute, funded by the legislature in the year 2000 in a public-private partnership between Willamette University College of Law, which pays 50%, and the state, which picks up the other 50%. All the employees who work on behalf of the commission are employees of Willamette on loan, so there's no PERS impairment. All of the employment issues and related what have you that operates the commission is handled by Willamette University as a private entity. We're proud of that relationship and of our track record over these last years of performing a continuous program of law improvement. That's our purpose. And our track record speaks for itself, and this current session we have under the law improvement heading some 24 bills that we've advanced. What I want to do in particular is respond to the issue of our request for some additional staff funding. And our reason for that is what we hope to see mature in the 07 session. There are three projects that have come to us as a result of the maturing of the Law Commission that each address very important priorities, I know, of this legislative body, the governor's office, and elsewhere, and on behalf of the state itself and the people. First is a public safety issue, and that is a project to revamp our background check laws so that we know for each agency what's meant by a background check. The problem is each agency, when asking for a background check on an employee, a potential employee, doesn't know necessarily what it is for which they're seeking input. The scope, that is unknown, and we seek to unify those statutes and bring those together. Representative Kropp, my name is Dave Kanagi, Associate Dean at the Willamette Law School, Executive Director of the Law Commission. And so, again, the promise of what we see occurring in the 07 session will all take place as we marshal the resources of experts between now and then to advance that important piece of legislative change. It's one that the Oregon State Police and others are anxious to see occur, but again, because it's everybody's business, because every agency has a piece of concern, it ends up being nobody's business. Then the second one that I want to highlight, again, looking to the future, and the reason for our request for additional funding, relates to the area of ethics. At the close of the last session, Governor Kulongoski approached the Law Commission and asked if we would take upon the commission's shoulders a project to rewrite all of the pending, all of the existing ethics, essentially all the existing ethics statutes, to bring them into line with current practice and take a fresh look from A to Z, which is what the Law Commission is doing. We gather expertise from literally around the country and make that our first order of business. The Law Commission's program committee, chaired by the Attorney General, agreed to take that on, but subject to funding. And that is one of our challenges, to keep what we do going and take on these other important issues to restore confidence in government by the people and to do what we wish to see done, all of us, for the benefit of those who live in this fine state. And the third project, again, looking to 07, again, in addition to our ongoing work, is exceedingly important because of the dollar savings that it holds forth potentially. We've been asked by the Treasurer's Department, by the Treasurer's Office, as well as others, to bring together a group to look at the way in which we currently bond in the state of Oregon. The problem is that our bonding statutes date some to the 30s and have evolved, as legislation tends to do, with municipalities, counties, and the state operating under different statutory authority. And what happens when we go to New York to the underwriters and seek funding is we're paying, we are confident, something more, whether it's one basis point or five or 20, than we should as a state for the money that we borrow, simply because our statutory constructs are outdated, obsolete in many respects, and fail to acknowledge current vehicles for funding that would better bring to the state of Oregon the resources that we know we'll be seeking through bonding, but to do so in a way that, again, matches the expectations of the bond funding community. That project alone I consider to be probably the most important and the most boring possible project you could imagine. And yet, it is the project that I think holds forth the opportunity for as much, if not more, savings for the state than we can imagine. And again, why hasn't it just happened automatically? It's because I remember back in 2000 explaining to the e-board, it's like when the legislature funds a bridge project. We hope it'll last forever, but even bridges wear out. Same with statutes. Things change, expectations alter, and the need for a continuous program of legislative reform that brings together experts in an apolitical context to think about what's the best recommendations we can make to the legislature is what the commission's about. And with those three projects alone, my expectations are high that we would consider supplementing our staff in such a way that Willamette would match and we'd be in a position to really serve the state fully as our mission suggests.
Thank you very much. I think the obvious question is that if there's as much as a one basis point or up to however many more, the Treasurer's Office is a very well-run shop. This panel has had the opportunity to hear their presentation, and we're in general agreement with the presentation materials, the prioritization. It seems unfair to ask this question absent the Treasurer here, but of an undertaking as significant as you're talking about, to what degree have you collaborated with the Treasurer to say this is pretty important and why don't we collectively find the funding?
I have not spoken with the Treasurer's Office on funding per se, except to this extent. It's clear that the way the Treasurer's Office will participate in the project is by allocating the time of existing staff to proceed with this project. And I think in that sense, we pull together not only the Treasurer's Office, but many other agencies, as well as the volunteers and lobbyists where necessary, at the state, county, and city levels, where those physical assets, that is the human beings, the intellect, and the wherewithal intellectually that's brought together is the major contribution. So dollars and cents, we've not sought specifically from the Treasurer's Office. What we seek is expertise, and that's what we're best at pulling together, particularly from the private sector, including a national expert on the subject of government bonding. It happens to be a Willamette Graduate School of Management professor, Fred Thompson, who will be joining the work group as we see it.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. I didn't think we could go through this portion of the budget without at least having the opportunity for the Law Commission to chat. I had an opportunity to spend a bit of time talking with the Associate Dean as well as their most lethal lobbyist, Justice Lindy, who came over to talk about and I say lethal in an affectionate and respectful way. He's a force of nature when it comes time to advocate for the Law Commission. But one of the things that I was interested in having some exploration about was to what degree other law schools could participate. We've described this as a public benefit mission, and it seems as though Willamette is bearing a disproportionate amount of the burden, and it's something that I think we should continue working on. I know you visited with Northwestern, but I also think that there's a chance to have a conversation with U of O. That would probably be activities not for right now, but for in the future. But we wanted to make sure that you got a chance to make the case for the Law Commission. So thank you very much. We're going to return to our regular agenda, and I believe...
thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Rocco from Legislative Fiscal. Right, we got one of those. Good morning, Mr. Rocco.
Good morning, Madam Chair. The record, Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Office. I'm here today to give you an overview of what Legislative Fiscal tries to do for you.
In all of its many iterations.
Sometimes it's a difficult challenge.
Most of the time, Madam Chair.
Please begin your presentation, Mr.
Thank you. The agency was created in 1959, so there's a long history of Legislative Fiscal Office in the building here. And it's created as a nonpartisan, permanent professional support staff to the legislature. We have a statutory mission, and the statutes talk a lot about ascertaining things, so we are ascertainers, I believe. But we're supposed to look into things like reviewing the governor's budget, and this is all by statute, looking at state expenditures, fiscal implications of measures on state agencies and on local governments also, and other things as directed by the Assembly. We staff not only the Ways and Means Committee during session, but we're also statutorily required to staff the Emergency Board, the Legislative Audit Committee, and the Joint Committee on Information Management and Technology. Those three meet during the interim. And then any other special committees that are established. At times there's a special interim budget committee established by leadership or something like that, which then we are asked to staff.
Mr. Rocco, as additional responsibilities have been added to your shop, have they come with money and staff?
We've had increases over the past several, well, not recently, but we've reorganized, and I'll get into that a little bit in a few minutes. But back in 91, three additional positions were added to the staff to do fiscal impacts, because before that time, they were done by the executive branch. And there was always an issue of their receipt. Usually the tendency was, as session wore on, they were received at the time of floor session. And sometimes that had consequences for the debate, obviously, because no one had heard the fiscal impact before then. So the legislature at that time added three staff positions to Legislative Fiscal Office. And then I believe in the mid-90s there was an addition of two more budget analyst positions. But that's about it over the past, as long as I can, I've been here. And I was hired in 1991 as one of those fiscal analysts. So.
I'm just trying to anticipate the additional burden on your office. For example, when the Ways and Means Joint Committee went out on the road, as they did to solicit public input for the co-chair's budget, you attended every one of those meetings, the amount of additional staff time that was required. Did that come out of your budget?
Madam Chair, the cost for the meetings themselves came out of the Assembly budget, but my time came out of our budget, yes. But my time doesn't count. So.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Going through this binder that we have for you, on the second page there's a description of some of the things that we do, the programs and activities during the session. As you're probably aware, we provide the budget analysts for all the state agencies through the Ways and Means process. We do fiscal impacts on all legislative measures. So we actually read every measure to make a first cut at whether it is a fiscal, has a some fiscal to it, or if it's non-fiscal. And so every bill is read by one of three people in our office, which is a serious workload issue given the number of bills that come through. And that also includes amendments, all amendments, and that committees either are considering or actually adopt. We also are responsible for facilitating the development of the Ways and Means or co-chair budget and ultimately the legislatively adopted budgets and other variations on that theme. So, for example, right now we're building a Senate budget and a House budget independent of each other.
How much additional stress does that put on your office doing these two separate budgets?
Madam Chair, it causes mostly just scheduling nightmares to make sure that we're running dual systems. A lot of it depends on the willingness of leadership to allow staff to make the schedules that work best for staff. And in some cases, that just can't be done because of other priorities that are needed. So. I would have to say it causes additional stress, yes, but To date, it hasn't caused any serious adverse reaction yet. And in addition, during session, we, as much as possible, we try to provide other information and support to members that are not on Ways and Means. I think at one time there was a belief that non-Ways and Means members couldn't come down at this end of the building, and we have tried very hard to get rid of that notion and try to help people when we have the time. If they have questions on the budget or on a program in an agency, we try the best we can to do that, to get answers to those types of questions. During the interim, our role changes a bit. One of our primary duties is to provide analysis and recommendations to the emergency board, which meets about every 10 to 12 weeks. And that, I'm sure you all know this, but that's the board that monitors the state financial affairs when the assembly isn't in session. And this board is important enough that on the night of, or the day of sine die, that board has to be created nearly immediately, because without it, there is no ongoing authority over the state financial affairs. So the board is normally, after everyone leaves the building at sine die, there has to be an emergency board meeting immediately, all within an hour or two after that. As I mentioned, we also provide analysis and recommendations to the audit committee. We work with the audit committee to develop a work plan on the kinds of reviews they want to engage in during the interim. We collect requests from members, from staff, and things that appear during the previous session in budget reports, budget notes, even discussions in committees where there's an interest of the legislature to pursue something. So we take these to the audit committee, along with the Secretary of State also does this, and then the audit committee develops a work plan for the interim, which we try to follow a schedule of getting them information and draft reports, and sometimes we even have proposed legislation. I think the audit committee had a couple of measures this time based on our last interim work.
Senator Morse, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. We've had the Secretary of State's budget and his proposal to expand their performance audit functions, and we have a consideration with a House bill to transfer some of those functions to legislative fiscal. Are you comfortable commenting on that expanded role as it might land in your shop? And maybe contrast what it is that you do now that is being done, that could be done if you had additional resources.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, I think the bill you're referring to, I think in its current form, would establish a new legislative audit office. It would be independent of legislative fiscal, structured similarly with legislative fiscal in terms of staff, but it would be an independent office from LFO. And in the past, we've worked with the Secretary of State on reviewing the types of audits that they're proposing, and frankly, we've had some disagreements with them on topics that they should pursue, but they are independent of us, so they, you know, they do what they think they need to do. And they do review those with the audit committee, so the audit committee has some role in determining what types of audits they do. So the current proposal, I think, that's in the House bill is to set up a separate office. And this came out of some work that was done in the interim to review the situation in other states and how they do audits. And also, it ties into our renewed interest or continuing interest in performance measures. And I think a bit later in this presentation, there's some information on some things that we're looking at in the interim to maybe enhance our ability to monitor the performance measure process that states are having. And I think most of the issues with the Secretary of State are over performance type audits. It's not their financial audits at all. And I think the House bill would retain their ability to do all of their constitutionally required audits, which are the financial audits. And there is a bit of a disagreement over that. But.
Comment. It would seem to me that we would have a much more efficient system if you had somewhat in the same shop people that are working the budgets and the agencies and analysis. Also, you know, because of the understanding, have the ability to expand that role. And actually, because we're in part of our budget process, you know, we've got performance measures, we want standards of performance. Spinning that off into a whole different independent agency, really, quite frankly, Madam Chair, doesn't make much sense. But to do it as a part of a comprehensive budgeting process that's ongoing, to me makes, I mean, there's some merit to that, but I'll end my editorial comments.
Well, I'll take up where you left off. I think the fact that we seem to have the necessity to do performance measures within legislative fiscal, and yet that activity seems to happen someplace else right now, finding a way to integrate the performance measures so that they're consistent in the budgets. And I think that what Senator Morris and I learned is in wanting to put best business practices in your office. In fact, Mr. Nisswander helped us figure a way out of the woods. We were doing it in a somewhat haphazard way with only those budgets that we could lay our hands on. And if, in fact, it's a good idea to have best business practices built into these budgets, having some point of centralization made a great deal of sense. And I would like very much to revisit the question of having the performance measure responsibility be in your shop, along with the commensurate bodies and money to make that happen, not just give you another responsibility on top of the formidable responsibilities that you already discharge.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think we will be talking with you about that in the next few weeks.
One other thing that I hope you touch on, and I'm leaping ahead a little bit in your presentation material, but we have had some other agencies come before this panel and talk about very serious difficulties that they've gotten into by not having the technology at their fingertips to discharge their responsibilities. And I believe you're going to talk about that a little later, but I just want to underscore the panel's interest in hearing what technological gaps might exist in your shop that make it difficult for your staff and those pieces of technology, hardware and software, that might make it easier for you to do what you do. I know your people put in excessive hours during the session, and if you had some of the technology improvements, maybe that would ease that burden a little bit.
I can talk about that now, Madam Chair, if you'd like. Or
go ahead.
I think it is one of the issues that I was going to get to, but again, in the interim, we were looking at the possibility of getting someone on staff that could give us better expertise at accessing some of the statewide systems that exist. I think the best example of this would be the Orbit system, where in the past the budgeting data was residing on a mainframe system that we had no real access to. And over the past, I can't even remember how many years now, 6-8 years, we've been working to develop this Orbit system, which is more of a more of an online type system for staff to be able to produce these budget binders that you see. And most of the binders on those shelves, or all of those binders, are produced by this system now. And so if you were here a few years ago, you remember the green and white line sheets. That's what this system has replaced. And it's integrated the narrative functionality and the data functions all together into having it all in one, reside in one place. And for us, that's in the past, we had to then get those green and white sheets and rekey all that data manually into our own systems in order to bring you recommendations on changing an agency's budget. And now that has, we don't have to do that now. So this has been a great advancement for us in terms of preparation time, where we don't have to do as much manual work in order to get a better product to you. So it's much more efficient. But there are other systems that we would like to have greater. It's not a question of access. It's more of a question of our abilities and knowledge to use the data in those systems. And that would be like the what is referred to as the PIC system and other systems like that.
Have you priced that technology or that access?
Madam Chair, we haven't specifically. We were looking at maybe a skilled position, somebody with those types of skills, and I'd have to check with my budget officer. He's happening to sit next to you right now.
Well, I would ask the committee staff as well as your budget officer, for the benefit of this panel, to get some financial sideboards around exactly what you need so that this panel could work with your office to see if it's within the realm of financial possibility to help you with access to that material.
We would be glad to do that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
This is an issue I've had conversations with Ken about, and I've had taken great interest in. There is a DAS system called RefBIPS that you are familiar with. That will
familiar may overstate my working knowledge of it.
It is an online system that has capability to go into the data mart and retrieve information on it, and it's an accounting system that was originally designed just for DAS, but its capabilities are expandable and upgradable to be readily available. It was developed for about $300,000 by a team of three highly qualified and very bright software engineers at DAS in a five-month time period. I've seen it demonstrated. It is an outstanding system, and it's going to die because Orbitz will be ultimately expanded, is my understanding, my conversations with the director of DAS and Don Fleming from IRMD. The Orbitz will be expanded to do a similar function, to marry budgeting and accounting together, which I think is a proper goal and should be, because then it allows, I think, LFO staff a greater ability to show us actual expenditures, accountability, those types of things per category. And I guess I'm just amazed we haven't done this type of thing before, but I'm learning a lot of things about government. Just listening to Ken describe how they used to have to rekey things in, we've gone, miles and miles, leaps and bounds, and I think that's very appropriate. I worry sometimes about the amount of money that we're spending. It's an old song for me in IT in this state, and what we're getting for it when we have extremely talented people within agencies. And it's agency people, as I understand, that are developing Orbitz too, that have great capabilities and can do these things for sometimes lesser amounts of money, believe it or not, than what the private sector can do by contracting out. And I never thought I would say that, but I have to admit that I've been presented with examples of it in the IT business, which worries me on the line item appropriation we have for the Scenic project, $26 million line item to one consultant to manage that project. And that's a discussion we need to have in the future. I don't know what we're buying for that, and it concerns me.
Well, I think that from our earlier panel discussion with DAS, that we have held all of the IRMD discussion as well as the Scenic discussion, given exactly the issues that you've raised, and I'm hopeful that the Joint Ways and Means process can find its way back so that we're discussing it in that forum, because I think those are tremendously serious issues, and obviously the DAS budget hasn't moved because I think there's interest in this building in thoroughly vetting the kinds of points that you've just brought to the panel's attention.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your indulgence.
I think the issue that we're left with is to make sure that we get some kind of pricing for the tools that you need to make your shop work, and I'm less interested, I think, in trying to specify what the technology is than identifying your need for it and what you think it would take financially to be able to have the expertise in your shop to go out and hunt for whatever it is you need, whether it's rough bits or whether it's Orbitz or whatever. That would be best left to the certified smart guy. We just got to make sure you've got access to people who are able to get the data for you.
And we will look into that, Madam Chair, and get back to you in the next stage of this process.
Great. Thank you.
And actually, the next thing I was going to point out that we do during the interim is monitor agency execution of the legislatively approved budget. And that's one of the things, this is on page 4, this is one of the things that Orbitz, as Representative Krupp has mentioned, Orbitz is moving towards allowing us to get actual expenditures to date by budget categories. And the importance of this is that the accounting system is set up on a different type of organizational structure than the budget system. And so what we asked Orbitz people to do was to put in crosswalks or linkages so that all of these thousands of accounting structures point to the proper budget structure. And that allows us then to quarterly look at expenditures compared to the their budgeted allocation, which is very helpful for staff in the interim to monitor how agencies are spending. Now, that does not mean that an agency will not have its own accounting structure or something like RefBips to use, and every agency has something like that. Most agencies use Brio, which is a software tool that allows you to get into the data mart and access that kind of data that goes down into more detail than we are normally interested in for budget development work. So we're working on that, and that's another improvement to the system that we're looking forward to.
Madam Chair, if I could emphasize the point Ken is talking about, 2 years ago I asked, or actually during this last interim, I asked DAS for a complete list of vendor contracts with all state agencies and personal services contracts, and found some very interesting things that just served to raise more questions, because the detail of explanation on is not there, number one. And there are miscodings because of the differences in agency accounting systems. Sometimes they're just, things are miscoded, and it doesn't line up with what you're asking for, and it is a problem. I looked at a code for tire chains. We spent two separate line items, two contracts for tire chains in the 0305 0305 budget period, and it totaled $4.2 million for tire chains. And on a subsequent call to ODOT, they said no, the most we've spent in any year is $26,000. So what it is likely a miscoding somewhere in the system. And so what I'm asking for doesn't line up with what is the information that's been given. And that kind of confusion hopefully needs to be rectified, and I hope that that's what Orbitz ultimately will achieve.
Thank you. With the forbearance of the panel and Mr. Rocco, I'm going to, unless there's objection, ask you to step aside for a moment out of respect for Representative Butler, and knowing that he is AWOL from his committee right now. Ms. Quigley is here. If we could move to the Commission on Indian Services. And Representative Butler, would you like to testify in advance of Ms. Quigley, and then we could come back and have her presentation?
Madam Chair, I would like to be able to testify on both the Commission for Indian Services as well as Legislative Revenue as House Revenue Chair, if I may. And if you can open those two different items for me, I would appreciate it.
We would be very happy to invite you to come forward and receive your testimony, and then we'll finish Mr. Rocco, and then take Dr. Warner, and then come back to the Commission on Indian Services, if that's acceptable to the panel. Good morning, Representative Butler.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you very much for your kindness in allowing me to do this. I'm State Representative Tom Butler from House District 60. I'm here wearing one of those other hats that we get the opportunity and are fortunate enough to wear, and I'm honored to be with you today on both the issues of the budgetary request for the Legislative Revenue Office as well as the request for the Commission on Indian Services. Relative to the Revenue Office, if I may first, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the performance measurements are very difficult to come up with in many of these in-house kinds of committees that we as legislators use and rely upon, and certainly legislator satisfaction would be probably the highest level of budget performance, outcome performance that some of these committees within the building are legislative revenue and legislative fiscal and legislative council and the other kinds of committees. And so I wanted to, as the chair of the House Committee on Revenue, wanted to express my appreciation and gratitude for Director Paul Warner and his staff. They're doing us an excellent job. I would just report to you the volume that you will hear. We've had the same level of staff since the office began 30 years ago, same number of personnel. The personnel in the last few years has changed, has turned over to 6 total staff, and you'll have more staff turnovers in the next couple of years, to the extent that these folks, many of them have been around for many, many years in the Legislative Revenue Office, and it would be very difficult, and it will be very difficult as we lose members to retirement. A couple of years ago, we lost Dick Yates to retirement, and a person whom we've all come to rely on when it comes to issues of education, Steve Meyer, has been with us in that office for 30 years. It doesn't take much imagination to stop and think, how are you going to replace that kind of knowledge? I don't think you'll ever replace it immediately, but certainly you'll have a training, and I appreciate the fact that Director Warner has been able to multitask with some of his staff to do that. So, and then the volume, the sheer volume that has taken place during this particular time. And I appreciate the fact that Paul, as an economist, with a PhD in as an economist, he says, you know, we've got to have productivity gains. Well, when we talk about productivity gains, originally they were running the reports, the legislative revenue impact reports, on between 600 and 800 bills. Thus far this session, they've done nearly 3,400 bills with an expectation that it will continue to go up. Colleagues, I guess what I'm telling you is that we can expect so much out of so many, and I appreciate the fact that with over the 30 years, computers have been introduced, and this is a place where in revenue and fiscal where we are maximizing the benefits of orbits and other kinds of programs. But there's only so much that you can squeeze out of the human element. And then again, 85% of every dollar that's involved in the legislative revenue budget is in personnel. So when we need to take a 10% cut, we can't retire machinery and equipment. A 10% cut, which we're directed to offer the 10% cut as a potential, means a staff member. And a staff member then would mean that based upon the fact that 6 staff members are assigned and are producing an average of 800 pieces of legislative revenue information out of that office, it means that 800 bills don't get analyzed for the revenue impact. And that is critical, particularly if it's a bill that's important to you or to me, then that's critical for each of us. But I did want to tell you that I have a great and an outstanding relationship with the members of the staff. They're all professional staff. They conduct themselves professionally. The budget request moves its current service level only. It moves from a $1.46 million budget to a $1.55 million budget. in the current biennium. I guess the concern that I have is that when we come back in the interim and expect that these folks will travel to the various parts of the state, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to capitalize on the EdNet as opposed to putting our staff on the road, that the EdNet would be able to be utilized in that process. While being able to travel, if we're out there for probative purposes to try and figure out what the pulse of the economy is, and certainly that's what we should be doing as legislators, but if we want to have our staff out there, there's a significant additional cost. And that just runs a truckload right into the budget. A big freightliner truck just gets hitting our budget at high speeds. But I anticipate that Representative Dingfelder and myself have worked on some concepts for the interim, and a portion of that concept would be to come in and examine the effectiveness of the tax expenditures. And once we start examining the effectiveness and trying to get outcomes identified with the tax expenditures of the state, it's going to be the Legislative Revenue Office that we have to turn to. And I have worked with Director Warner on some of these issues, and I anticipate that he will continue to share some of those issues with our members, the members of the Senate and the House. But the concern is that if we expect that we're going to have that full and thorough analysis of the effectiveness of credits and tax expenditures in the state of Oregon, that we really need to take a look at what that might engender in the way of additional staff that could be either loaned in the interim from some other portion of the state services, and perhaps in doing some cross training similar to what legislative revenue or legislative fiscal has been very successful in doing, even recognizing that there is no counterpart Department of Administrative Service BAM analyst as we have with LFO. So I again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would advocate and do express my appreciation and gratitude for the leadership which we have in legislative revenue. If I may, Madam Chair.
Before you change subjects, sure. Representative Butler, I just would like to put Dr. Warner on notice that we have had a conversation with Mr. Rocco from Legislative Fiscal this morning already in discussing their workload and the expectation that the legislature has on their ability to analyze and ascertain different pieces of information. What technology might be useful in order to facilitate their work? And I'm going to ask Dr. Warner in his presentation to comment on any technology gaps or places where there might be improvements. This panel had the opportunity to hear an agency that had allowed their technology to erode to a point that they were, I think, seriously in risk of being able to discharge their primary function. And I know that we're all operating under some significant fiscal constraints, but to deprive these two important offices of the technology that lets them do their job, I think is pound. You'll have to help me with this. Pound.
Pennywise.
Thank you, sir.
Pound foolish.
Thank you. So I will just invite that testimony when Dr. Warner comes forward with his presentation.
Madam Chair, at the risk of the fact that maybe Dr. Warner won't bring it up, you may recall that in the 1999-01 session, or in the 01-03, we had authorized a certain amount of money back a few years ago to do an extended modeling and do a little more dynamic modeling. And this is, if there is a failure in the office right now, it's the fact that the money that was allocated for the dynamic modeling under the OTIMS, the Oregon Tax Incident Model, midway through, as opposed to bringing in the multi-state approach and a national approach, recognizing that we were having on the verge of a budget crisis, we brought the best that money could buy for the price and got about halfway through, and then returned a full third of the OTIMS research money back to the general fund budget in order to bridge us through that difficult economic crisis that we were in after the 2001 session. Consequently, the OTIMS model is not as dynamic as it should be, and Madam Chair, for yourself and other members of your committee who know that we can go the extra step here, the extra step there. The OTIMS model takes us to the door, but it doesn't open up that door for us. And so if there was a element, a piece of additional productivity, and I'm going to, for lack of a better word, I'm going to call it software, that we should have developed, but for lack of funds during the 01 budget crisis, did not get fully developed and implemented. It is a fully dynamic model, as full as economists will let it go.
I'm going to ask Mr. Nisswander to flag that for the committee, and it would be something that we would come back and discuss. It would be very helpful if we had some pricing on it and understood completely the ramifications of the fiscal impact to acquire that and to be able to walk through the door, as Representative Butler says. The other thing, Representative Butler, before you move to your testimony on the Commission on Indian Services, you have touched on a point in your testimony that I want to amplify, and that is the professional and nonpartisan nature of both legislative revenue and legislative fiscal. I think that we all, as legislators and part of this process, need to be vigilant to make sure that people feel as though they can come into this building and make a professional career here in these offices without having politics infused into the very difficult work that they already do. I think the kind of people that we recruit and retain need to know that this is a place where they could have a future, they could make a professional life. And to the degree that we create an environment that respects their nonpartisan and professional contributions, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to keep that foremost in our mind, that we're able to recruit people of the caliber of Dr. Warner and Mr. Rocco and certainly the folks in Ledge Council, that they feel as though they can come here and make a professional life, and that we just have to constantly stay vigilant to make sure that we protect that nonpartisan and professional relationship that they have with the legislature.
And Madam Chair, I would say that I enjoy a very excellent working relationship with the Senator, with Senator Deckard, your Senator counterpart, for the Senate Revenue Committee. I wish that all folks would reach back and forth across the aisle as well as Senator Deckard does. And Madam Chair, you're in a position where you're dealing with dollars and cents, and we find that no matter whether it's an independent or a Democrat or Republican dollar, they still have the same number of cents in them. So we've got to be very cognizant of the fact that these don't need to be partisan issues. And I'll be in meetings back to back with a member from across the aisle, a member from across the chambers, and again, my House members, and I've made that abundantly clear to those members of the other party in our House committee, that they have access and regularly do find them. I find them in the offices working with. The Legislative Revenue Office staff on trying to develop other kinds of approaches, and I've appreciated that. As a matter of fact, one of the more recent bills that we adopted in the House Revenue and passed across the House floor was a bill that had two representative Democrat members, one Republican, that gathered a whole series of a half a dozen bills, and under the tutelage of Director Warner, were able to smith out a pretty decent plan of earned income, refundable earned income tax credit for working Oregonians in low income tax brackets, and were able to answer about five questions as to housing, as to work, as to child care credits and those kinds of things that folded together in a pretty decent package that, with the exception of three members of the House that said, you know, if it's good legislation, why can't we do it right now today? And the fiscal realities we just couldn't jump over. But again, this was legislation smithed out by those folks who, on a very bipartisan approach, and the beautiful part of it was it came back being presented to the floor by both a Democratic member and a Republican member of the House without the least smack of any politics in it at all. So I think it demonstrates that office's ability to absolutely be bipartisan and without any of those kinds of amendments.
Thank you. Now I would invite your testimony on the Commission on Indian Services.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair and colleagues, let me just say this. Of all of the service, And I'm probably letting the cat out of the bag right now, but so don't everybody get your applications. Out of all the service that I do in the legislature, probably the most rewarding that I have enjoyed the very most is that of serving on the Commission for Indian Services. And at the risk of sounding very non-political at this particular point, I'm going to tell you something that I've told the chair of the commission, Chair Jay Kemp. Mentor, Mike Kenthorpe. I can get him over with the governor of Idaho. Anyway, Kenthorpe, Mentorpe. I have so much enjoyed the meeting with the other nine tribal members, and Senator Brown and myself have the pleasure of serving and representing the Senate and the House. I've told him, I said, you know, the white man knows how to get together and have meetings, but the tribal nations know how to get together and have meetings and have fun, and they really enjoy it. And it took me about four meetings to recognize that these, in large part, these people don't just have a lot in common as they get together and meet and discuss those issues which are most important to Oregon's nine Native American, federally recognized Native American tribes, but they also have a huge kinship, and they recognize that kinship back from generations and generations ago, that they know that they're all in this as family. And so it's more like a family reunion when we have our meetings. I've never noted any animosity amongst the tribes. As a matter of fact, as they have met, the director has been very skillful in being able to draw out all of the good things that we have in common amongst the tribal nations, and they're genuinely pleased when one tribe gets something that the other tribes may not yet have in the way of an investment or other activity that they've been recognized to be able to move forward for an economic advantage that tribe maybe hasn't previously had, enjoyed. And so I would just let you know that the activities and part of the budget that you'll see with regard to the our Legislative Commission on Indian Services is that of the ability to move from for the director and modest staff, it's a two-person office, to be able to move from a tribal nation. They spread from the far south coast to the far north coast to eastern Oregon, as far as Harney County, and we do have a non-federally recognized tribal nation as to Oregon in South Malheur County. So they go to the Umatillas on the northeast portion, and to the McDermott Paiute on the southeastern Oregon border, but the federally recognized the Burns Paiute. So I would just say that we have an excellent staff. They do an excellent service for us, and particularly the work which has been done and that is being cited nationwide and has been examined worldwide is the great work which is being done on the government-to-government relationships. Recognize that these are tribal nations, sovereign nations, within the state of Oregon, bounded by the state of Oregon's boundaries on each side of them, and we have to have government-to-government relationships with every agency that you'll see in Ways and Means, in all of the facets of Ways and Means. And so it's imperative that these folks have these kinds of ongoing relationships. And as I say, that has been held up not just among the other states as a nationwide model, but has been examined by other nations and other tribes within other nations of ethnics and other folks that have looked at this to say, is there a way for us to model your government-to-government relationship? So this, I think, is the hallmark of these folks having an excellent director, excellent staff to assist them to kind of make sure that they funnel their energies in the proper way. And I think more than anything, the fact that we've got folks that could be warring one with another that show absolutely no signs of that as their tribal leaders gather in the Commission for Indian Services. As a matter of fact, I think that you'll see that within the tribal nations, the rise in economic level of activity and in terms of growth of personal income and growth of education and growth of healthiness within their tribal members, all of these things are on a significant upswing, and I think that should be recognized as you see how well the director has done and consider the budget for the Legislative Commission on Indian Services.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. We're going to do one question and then come back to Mr. Rocco.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Good morning, Chair Butler, my first chairman in this building. What are two or three of the key issues that are facing the Native Americans? Yeah, I mean, as you know, what are the issues that we as a body need to be aware of?
Chair Senator Johnson, to Representative Greg Smith's question, I would think probably from my own perspective, the nations work on typically on issues such as economic development, on health and wellness amongst their people, and then upon public safety. And I wouldn't diminish from the economic well-being and the health and wellness the factor that they continue to increase in stature with regard to their educational opportunities both on the reservation as well as those that are off to university level work and then returning to manage some of the tribal businesses in an attempt to slot themselves back in, raise themselves up, raise the nation up within their sovereign nation, and then attempt to make sure that they have opportunities for growth for all members of the tribal nations. So I think probably in pretty much that order, I know, Representative Smith, you have a keen interest and a desire to see to their economic well-being, and I just on some of the tours that I've taken personally of some of the tribal nations' activities, if you'll just select one and spend a day or 2 days or 3 days with some of their tribal leadership and spend some time and see what they're doing, you gotta say, you know, if the state of Oregon could turn over a new leaf and say, let's see how we could start doing more with less, then this is the way. But you know, we don't consider ourselves cousins either, and maybe that's one of the things that we need to come back and repent of and change our lifestyle and say, hey, wait a minute. We all are brothers and sisters. We all come from a common ancestry of man. Let's, for goodness sakes, get along and see what we can do to lift up the whole nation as opposed to just your family versus my family.
Well, just very quickly, and then I know we have to...
This is it.
I know. She's a tough chair. I just firmly believe that, you know, we need to create opportunities or allow opportunities for every Oregonian, including Native Americans. And I absolutely am convinced that if we can help Native Americans with their entrepreneurial spirit and help them, you know, to give them the assistance they need to take that energy and that creativity and some of even that culture and history and help them to sustain some of their efforts, you know, through education, through training, through, you know, some gap funding type efforts. There's a lot of entrepreneurial opportunities out there. We just have to be willing to step up and acknowledge our role in them.
There really are. And, Madam Chair, if I can just comment to that, and then I'll return you back to your schedule, and I apologize. You know, you teach an Indian to fish, and you teach the whole tribe to fish, and they all work on it together. And the same is true with regard to if you gather one with skills to this particular level, the whole family rises to the higher level. And so using the analogy of teaching a person to fish, you know, you teach them to fish, you benefit the whole tribe. You teach a white guy to fish, and we'll go out and buy a pickup.
Thank you, Representative Butler. We would invite Mr. Rocco back. And given that I have not managed the time of today's meeting very well, I'm going to ask you, Mr. Rocco, to speed ahead. Tomorrow, the Construction Contractors Board has canceled, and so if we can conclude the legislative branches today, we will not have a meeting tomorrow. I want to be respectful of Ms. Quigley's presentation and leave ample time. So plow ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for your information, on page 5 of our presentation notebook is the org chart of the office. It shows you the classifications we have and the number of people in those classifications. Under tab 2 are our proposed performance measures, which I must admit we've struggled with because it's difficult for an agency of our nature to have performance measures, but we've tried to come up with several here. A couple are outputs only, and that's part of the nature of what we do. We process a lot of paperwork, and so those are output measures.
Representative
Smith.
Thank you. Hey, have you folks thought about having a one-day training session for new subcommittee chairs who are coming into the process to learn how LFO works and the way the process works and the way to be most efficient?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, we have tried in the past to do that in various ways, mostly by, but not an in-depth kind of thing like that, and that's probably a very good idea.
I think you'd be very well served to train us in how the process works and how to be most efficient with it, rather than allowing new subcommittee chairs to trip around for 3-4 months, learn the hard way, and then have Larry come and put their arm around them and
that's
share with you the better ways to do things.
That's certainly something we could try to do. We're thinking of the one measure, number 5, is the annual grade received by Governing Magazine. We're trying to work with Budget and Management Division of DAS to come up with some kind of a mirrored performance measure about the state's budget situation with them, because we're both responsible for it in a way. However, many of the factors that cause that rating to that we get from Governing Magazine to be what it is are totally outside of the control of staff. So we're still working on that. And any kind of change that when you do work session on these, we're willing to work on you with revising any of these or going back to the audit committee as other agencies have done. Under tab 3 is our prioritized program list. And I'm not going to go over that with you, but it breaks out by certain functions within the office of how we would prioritize activities. Under tab 4 is our reduction option list. And then tab 5 has some of the phase 2 materials that talk about what drives our budget, environmental factors, the fact that, as was already mentioned, that we're 85% of our costs are due to personnel costs, some of the things that have caused staff to work hard and extra hours over the past 3-4 years with special sessions and the last session budget process. And then the three things I just wanted to point out to conclude are the issues that we are trying to address immediately or during the interim, and that would be the technology issue that you've already brought up, Madam Chair. And I think in this case it's less the technology that we need. It's more of a skill, somebody with the skills to access technology that is existing in other systems of the state, and that's something we're still looking at and working towards, and we will get you more information on that. The fiscal impact review process, we're going to look at how to perhaps modify that slightly for the future, just because of the volume of bills. And this time we've used a rotation analyst program. In the past we've used that for a budget work primarily. This time we are using it for fiscal impact, because that's where our spike in workload occurs during session. And we, during the interim, we moved a fiscal impact person into budget review work, because on an ongoing basis that's where we need more people, is on the budget review. And we're looking at ways to perhaps modify the way we address fiscal impacts. And I think after session we're going to get some people together and look at ways to improve the dealing with the incredible volume of bills and requests that we get for fiscal impacts. And then finally, we're also looking at the performance measurement system. Right now, we have given many of the responsibilities of performance measurement to one of our staff people who has a regular budget load in addition to this other work we've provided. And we're looking at considering ways of trying to have our staff more involved in the interim on development of performance measures throughout the agencies, especially since during this session they're being tied directly to the budget. And we think this is an important thing that the legislature takes some ownership during the interim on the monitoring and the construction of performance measures. So with that, Madam Chair, I am finished. If there are any questions.
Any questions? Representative Smith.
I got to ask this. How do you get... You pay $7,160 to rent that hole over there? You're $171,000 in the governor's recommended budget.
For rent?
That's what it says. Yeah. Facilities rental.
Well, you'd have to take that with Dave Henderson. I think he was here.
Is that the best you guys could negotiate, was that?
It's a square footage charge.
I think you guys could cut that rate in half.
Well, Dave will be back.
Let's actually,
one shot to put him on the spot.
Let's actually tag that for Mr. Henderson when he returns. And in the interest of time, I think I'm going to summarize. If any of the panels wants to contradict me, I invite it. I'm going to ask Mr. Nisswander to mark for further discussion by this panel with respect to your budget, any technology upgrades, and also what I'm going to call, for lack of a better word, workload management, that will talk about the rotational analyst to do fiscal impact performance measures, and if the discussion broadens about audit, any audit function. And so I will just ask Mr. Nisswander to flag those. Any objection?
No.
Okay, with that, we're going to thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Quigley, you're here. I'm sure Dr. Warner is listening, but you're here. Let's go ahead and do your presentation. And Dr. Warner, on deck.
While she's coming up, I just want to let Ken know. I think you folks do just an absolutely fabulous job, and on behalf of the House, thank you.
Good. Remember that when we get ready to find money for his program.
So you can cut his
On deck.
Don't let him fix the election.
That's exactly right. Good morning. I'm sorry that we got rushing ahead. We're going to ask you to go through your presentation binder as quickly as possible, but leaving the opportunity to be comprehensive.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you a little bit, very quickly, about the role of the Legislative Commission on Indian Services and to request your support for continuation of this service for the state. The reason I'm handing out this paperwork is because the work the commission does is primarily about relationships, so it's not a lot of numbers. It has to do with building relationships between the federally recognized tribes in Oregon, Indians, and primarily state agencies. So very quickly, if I might just point out some things that are in this booklet and then give you a brief description of some of the things that we do, and then answer any questions you might have. There's the fact sheet. These are the kinds of things that I talk to, for example, when I am invited to speak by the Tax Assessors Association, state agencies, local government agencies, when federal agencies might have some questions about the Oregon tribes, or particularly how to work with the tribes in Oregon. We did not hire a consultant to develop a mission statement. Money savings there. But essentially, there are two pieces. The commission, which is the ongoing forum, it's the legislative leaders and tribal leaders getting together quarterly. And then there's the office that compiles information and provides that information, and in addition provides strategies for effective interaction between the tribes and, again, primarily state agencies. In terms of goals and historical perspective, the main thing about the commission is for it to be continue to be the point of contact for the state on Indian issues. This is where federal agencies, state agencies, local governments, legislators, and others call when they have to figure out who they need to talk to. In addition, there can be private consultations, small trainings, big presentations. Next week at Tribal Information Day, there will be several hundred people here. There will be a component of that is the state agency annual training that this two-person office develops and presents. Over 20 agencies will be coming in two panels, one talking about the tribal perspective of water. And again, this is to give state agencies that have a particular perspective about water issues and natural resource issues to broaden it so that they can see why they might do a better job of interacting with tribal governments if they understand, for example, how they have been using canoes for thousands and thousands of years on the coast as a means of transportation, as a way to get to the shellfish, as a way to get to the salmon. We're going to have a 24-foot dugout canoe in front of the Capitol. There'll be a tribal elder who actually made that canoe talking to the tribe, in addition to some two tribal leaders from Columbia River tribes talking about the importance of water for their culture and history. And Madam Chair, in terms of Representative Smith's comment earlier, there are so many ways in which the state benefits from a good relationship with tribes. Many, many initiatives of the state depend on cooperation with the tribe. Tourism, foreign tourists want to visit tribal nations. Rural areas are seeing incredible economic development because of the enterprises, smoke jerky operations, industrial lands that they can make available to industries that need a distribution center. They are critical. Employment, I mean, all the things that I know that you're familiar with in terms of being essential to Oregon developing well in rural areas in particular. There are several things that the commission is required to do by statute in terms of compiling information and monitoring agency action, providing annual training, and conducting formal meetings. An awful lot of this work of the commission has grown as the state, tribal, government-to-government relationship has developed. If you flip to the next, programs and target groups, I've mentioned several of these in terms of the quarterly commission meetings and planning for annual events. There are those ongoing consultations. Performance measures are difficult, as I described to Larry, because I barely have time to answer the phone and deal with all the trainings and speeches I'm asked to deliver to mark them down that as they're coming in or as I'm delivering them. I have a list of 21 different state agencies that have contacted me recently either to provide training to their managers to ask how to establish either a new relationship or to get an old relationship that's gone off track back on track with some tribe. So you can see the variety of relationships that the commission deals with.
Representative Smith.
I think you just raised an interesting point about developing relationships and helping relationships get on track or perhaps introduced for the first time. I think it would be very important for the Commission on Indian Services to try and identify those key members on the commission who and hook them up with their legislators or vice versa. I know who the chair is. I don't think I've ever met him. and mm-hmm. he's in my district. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, at some point, there's got to be a relationship there. And just being very candid, mm-hmm. I've tried several times to come out and just visit, and it's never occurred. And somehow we need to have that occur, and maybe mine's an isolated situation. But I think, you know, we could help strengthen relationships if we could help, you know, bring the leaders from the tribal nations together with legislative leaders.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I think that's a great point, and part of that is the learning process for tribal leaders too. It took them a long time to develop any sort of relationship with the state because many of them felt very strongly the federal government is the only government that they need to deal with, and in fact that they had been dealing with, so they know that operation very well. In terms of learning with the state, it was transferred to the governor, and they only wanted to deal with the governor. And I think in terms of line staff, a lot have been developing a relationship with state agencies, but the importance of the legislative assembly is critical. You are fellow policymakers, and just the issue that you raise is exactly how you should use me. If I were to find that out from you, I would make some calls. I would make it happen. I mean, and I would see why it hadn't happened in the past. And that's a lot of what I do.
Well, I just a quick follow-up. This committee, this entire committee right now, not only does general government, but also economic development and transportation. We get into housing issues. We get into a whole plethora of issues. And to me, it seems like it'd be very advantageous for us to make those relationships because it's just a win-win to make that work. And we're all working for the same common goal, but we have to be able to communicate. And I'm not sure how to do that. And so I guess I would turn to you and ask for your help. And I'm sure, I think you folks have tribal nations as well. And maybe I'm speaking on my own here, but I just think the more we can work together, the better.
Go ahead, Ms. Kirkland.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, members of the committee, this is a lot of what I do in terms of, and you may never, ever see me. It's behind the scenes. That tribal libraries bill that you dealt with in the past few weeks, a tribe came to me, and what they presented me with was probably not very appropriate in terms of a legislative proposal. We talked it out. What is it do you really want? I talked to the state librarian, talked with people drafting it here, and so I am available for the behind-the-scenes diplomacy to make sure that the people that need to talk to each other are doing so.
Thank you very much. I think that the Lewis and Clark activities have been a catalyst to help bring policymakers in this building together with tribal policymakers. And we have certainly, now speaking as the chair of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Activities for the state, have appreciated the efforts of your office to help work out some of the issues that have been diplomatically dicey. I'm going to regrettably ask you to move through the rest of your
Absolutely.
Presentation without any comments from us so that we have time for Dr. Warner.
Absolutely. Thank you. Agency organization has not changed for the past 30 years. The department priorities. Is this something, Madam Chair, that Larry goes over with you that has to do with proposed reduction and that what it would entail with 85% in personal services? You're talking about the commission's assistance, arm or leg? Or
yes, we will be going over that with the professional staff, and it's written here. We don't need you to cover it today.
Great. And again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, just for your information on the back, some additional contact information that we provide and a directory that we provide. These are things that are part of the statutory requirement to compile information. This is available on the web. We are making a great deal of use of the website to discuss all the matters related to state-tribal relations, working with tribes, and developing effective interactions with tribal governments and between the state and tribes. And again, it's also reminding the state of the great advantage they have in cooperating with tribal governments and how much all of Oregon stands to gain by developing positive relations.
Thank you very much for your presentation. And I think it was particularly compelling that you had Representative Butler, who has served on your commission, come in and share his firsthand experience. That was very useful testimony. So thank you. Any questions for Ms. Quigley?
Just one comment, if I could. Chair, also, just for the record, the Indian Services Commission has developed, and we've been working together with them to develop 5 draft performance measures, which are in the notebook under the Priorities tab, so that you also will have those for your consideration for
thank
the work session.
Thank you for bringing that to the committee's attention. Thank you. With that, we'll ask Dr. Warner to come forward.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
And thanks for the very useful information in here. The directories are invaluable, so thank you.
Any way we can be of assistance. Thank you.
Thanks. Dr. Warner. We're going to credit Representative Butler's time against you, so that's...
I think we can just adjourn that.
He's just asked Senator Deckard to the second part.
Mr. Hazelwood, you've offered your testimony already. You're not expecting to testify again today, are you? Thank you. Proceed ahead, if you would, Paul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. And I just thought I would walk through your notebook with you real briefly and just address questions that you may have and kind of highlight some of the changes that we see taking place. Of course, there's always changes we don't anticipate, but we do see some trends that might be of interest. As Chair Butler pointed out, our office was created in 1975, and I'm the third Legislative Revenue Officer, Rich Mudd, and then Jim Scherzinger, so I'm the third, coming in 1999. But the office professional staff and our office manager positions have stayed at 6 FTE. We do have session staff that come in and work as committee assistants and help us, particularly with reception during the session. We had 4 until the 01 funding reductions, and then we've cut that down to 3. So we, during the session, we are up to 9 FTE and cut that back to 6. If you look at kind of our areas of specialization, we are organized along those lines where we have, overall state and local public finance issues, and we've gotten, I think, more involved in some of the areas that we haven't historically been involved in, and doing a little bit more work in areas like bonding, for example, the unemployment tax system, some things that we haven't done before but are doing more of. Of course, the personal and corporate income taxes remains our bread and butter, and we do have spent a great deal of time in those areas. Property taxes, less time. Of course, when I came back to the Northwest in 1989, and nearly the entire time I was across the street in the executive branch, it was property taxes that dominated the office's activities with Measure 5. And even before Measure 5, the office was heavily involved in looking at alternatives to the property tax system and ways to provide property tax relief. And then, of course, Measure 5 and 50. So, but that has stabilized, and we see a property tax system, while complex now, it's not one we're seeing a lot of changes on. Most of the proposals are pretty minor. And so that's still a technical and time-consuming part of the work, but not the overriding issue that it used to be. Consumption taxes, we spend a lot of time looking at individual excise tax proposals. And, of course, we do we've maintained a model that we received from Washington that's helped us on their sales tax. We've kind of tried to tailor it to Oregon numbers, and that's allowed us to do some work, particularly on tax reform proposals. We have maintained the role of looking at the distribution formula for the state school fund that was created by the Revenue Committees in 1991.
And that is something we have spent a good deal of time on and continue to work on and look on, for example, the school budget that came out of the Senate Budget Committee last night. We quickly run through that and look at the implications of that for the individual districts, and then, of course, any proposed changes that are made to the formula. Chair Butler mentioned our OTIM model, and I'll talk some more about that, but really the economic effect of tax changes is an area that we've tried to develop much more in recent years. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of things are said about that, but what we've tried to do is develop what we would consider a state-of-the-art model to analyze things, and I'll talk about that in a minute, because that model also looks at the distribution of the tax burden. Those are really the two issues that we get the most questions about. I know you're probably the most concerned about in terms of revenue policy. What effect does it have on our economy, and who's going to bear the burden of changes? Of course, our work involves centered around the House and Senate Revenue Committees, including the interim committees. And Chair Butler mentioned the tax expenditure report. We actually have some statutory language that makes that something us to focus on, the tax expenditure report, which originally came out of the Revenue Committee. Of course, our session activities, I think you're familiar with those. We do oftentimes in the interim will get very involved in initiatives, and historically that's been an area. Now, and we haven't in the last general election didn't have major initiatives that we spent time on, but in prior general elections we've had, you know, issues like Measure 91, for example, on the federal tax subtraction and things like that that can take up a lot of our time. If you look on page 3, that's our organization chart, and we, of course, are a statutory committee, and my appointing authority is the Speaker and the Senate President and the chairs of the House and Senate Revenue Committees. Our positions are laid out there. We have I'm kind of the person that's a mile wide and an inch deep, and then we have our staff that works on in the areas of property tax, income tax, school finance, and then kind of a catch-all category looking at transportation and other excise taxes and lottery, for example. And then we have our office manager, Kim James, now for us, who really coordinates all of this for us and oversees our session staff. She does all the management of that staff and coordinates their activities. In terms of our outcome and performance measure information, we did spend some time looking at this and talked with Larry a good deal about this and kind of thinking through what kinds of things may be appropriate. It's pretty clear to me that really our best gauge of our performance is you and the legislature. That's our reason for existence, is to provide you with the information that you need and to ensure that it's objective and something you can count on that may not always be accurate in the sense that our predictions and expectations always come true, but you know that they're unbiased and consistent. So I think that some type of a survey device, and I know LFO has talked with you about that, would be something that would be useful in terms of performance measure and probably give some good information. We do have some kind of output measures in there, number of reviews completed, and Chair Butler mentioned that we've had a pretty significant increase in terms of the bills we look at and analyze. A lot of them, of course, are not revenue bills, and so that doesn't take much time, but a lot of them are becoming increasingly complicated, and so we do spend a fair amount of time on those things. One thing that in looking at this that was of interest, I thought, was looking back on the benchmarks, and I've been involved in the benchmark process for a long time, and there is a benchmark that number 33, which is the percent of Oregonians who understand the tax system and where the tax money is spent. And I don't know if I want to take that on as something to quantify, but it is something we spend a lot of time on. And you know, you for example, Measure 30, when that was on the ballot, you know, we had a large number of calls from people talking about things like the elderly medical subtraction and how that worked and what was the rationale behind that and what was the effect of that. We've had so those kinds of issues. And of course, one of the things that we do and try to spread out the word as much as we can is you know, the overall revenue system compared to other states. And we still get that. That's probably the most common question we get. And of course, we do end up spending some time. For example, last interim, with as Senator Johnson was a member of the interim tax reform committee. Spending time on the road and basically addressing questions and try to explain the background of the revenue system. So it is something I think that that we spend a lot of time on and should be a performance measure of some sort. But of course, the variables that go into influencing that understanding of the tax system are well beyond the capacity of our office. We do have
for those 8 on the road interim trips. How was that paid for?
That was paid for out of the assembly budget. We had actually had an e-fund reservation that was set aside for those meetings. We didn't actually use that, as I recall, Larry, on that, and it was used from the general assembly budget. So
that was not an added stress on your budget. I know you had a lot of staff on the road. Ms. James, you attended every one of those.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have missed him for the world. Well, yeah, I think you did too.
I missed one.
You missed one, okay. But yeah, that was what we do is we will build into this base budget for you the budget that we have, the $1.5 million budget. So I believe it's 6 meetings or 6 meetings per committee. So we assume those meetings. And of course, if we're meeting in Ontario, then that will have different costs than if we're meeting in Salem.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Good morning. How do you do continuing education if you can't travel out of state?
Well, that's one of the reductions that we have done in the light of the shortages we've had. We're hoping that we'll be able to do some of that in this coming biennium. It's something we have done on a you know, kind of a resource availability basis. But yeah, I think it is an important element. It helps us to be able to go to conferences and there's a fair number that are dealing with revenue issues.
Well, I assume revenue issues, especially at the federal level, aren't occurring in Portland, Oregon. They're occurring somewhere on the East Coast, and I'm assuming back in the D.C.
Mm-hmm.
area, and it'd be important for the state of Oregon to have its revenue folks back there learning what's going on.
Yes, I would agree. But what I found most useful is meetings that we have organizations of Western states that meet, and both that are just pure revenue and those that are both budget and revenue, to look at the analysis and assessment of federal tax impacts on the other states. Like California in particular has been kind of a source of information for all of us in the West, and they've been very good about sharing that information.
Follow-up, Representative Smith.
I'm going to jump a little bit, but it's related to this. Does the state of Oregon have anyone representing us back in D.C. on taxation issues besides our congressional delegation? Who's informing them of the impacts on Oregon revenue?
The Department of Revenue has done more, has been pretty active in that role. Director Harchenko was head of the Multi State Tax Commission for a period of time, and so they have been pretty active in that role and expressing concerns. There's an issue, for example, about nexus and corporate income taxes. That they have worked very closely with. the streamlined sales tax agreement is an issue that may not directly affect us, but does potentially have some indirect implications. And so we have worked with them, and they've been pretty active as far as at least gathering information and expressing concern about impacts of certain federal legislation. But I do think you're right about federal tax law. One of the things that I can see coming is, there was quite a bit of discussion about the recent federal legislation that allows taxpayers to either select sales or income taxes to deduct. If you listen to the president and kind of the discussion around the task force that he's set up on tax reform, they said they don't want to eliminate the mortgage interest deduction. They don't want to eliminate charitable deductions. What they've been silent on is state and local tax deductions. So I think that's an area that we could see some significant change with huge impacts for all the states. So we do monitor that, but we haven't been doing the traveling physically to get back there. And if we, the traveling that I would do as a first priority, that I've done in the past, would be to the western states initially, because we do have a series of regional meetings that are real helpful.
I'm going to ask the professional staff to tag that continuing education in your office, Dr. Warner, as one of the things we come back and revisit, as well as any technology issues or workload management with respect to personnel that you would like to raise with us in the last 5 minutes.
Just to follow up on that, Madam Chair, on the technology issue you had raised and you would like to have some comment on. I think a couple of things. We have been very active and a bit of a guinea pig on a document management system, going back to what we call PC Docs starting in 99, and now we have a web-based system. Results have not always been great, but I think it has helped us in terms of sharing information among ourselves, and now we're able to access all of our documents from any remote location. So I think that's been pretty helpful to us, particularly for me, is kind of because I'm the one, if the staff expert on it is not there, I'm the one who gets the question. And so that kind of technology has been real helpful. Things that would allow us greater mobility, laptops, for example. We have one laptop in the office. It's 5 years old. I've used it extensively for presentations. Presentation materials is another thing that would be helpful to us. I usually get out and do presentations on a pretty regular basis during the interim. So those kinds of things would be helpful, and we do get pretty good feedback usually from citizen groups about the information. So that would be the kind of thing that would help us. We do have some sophisticated modeling models. Chair Butler mentioned the OTIM model that has specific software called GAMS. That's expensive. The OTIM itself, the chair mentioned, our desire to upgrade that. We need to do some things in terms of updating the data, but the model itself, I would argue, is one of the most sophisticated in the country, and we used extensive help from Bruce Smith at California Department of Finance. In fact, we had him come out, and they had developed the dynamic revenue model there, the DRAM model, as they call it, in California. We're the first state to really do that. So we used all of their software in there. So we think we've got a pretty good model. We need to update the data on it. We need to do some more analysis on some of the key parameters, and we need to do a better job of presenting it so it's more understandable. Those are the things that we wanted to work on with it.
If you wouldn't mind getting to Mr. Nisswander a comprehensive list so that you're not being asked to do this off the top of your head, and to what degree you can assign any pricing with it would be very helpful.
Okay, I'll do that, Madam Chair. The last thing I'll close with is just your budget drivers and your phase two discussion and address any issues. I've just divided it, trying to think of this as an economist, between labor and capital. And, of course, labor is 88% of our budget. We're not asking for any kind of additional staff or anything like that. But I think some marginal increases, improvements in our capital would be the area where we could get some return on our investment, particularly in terms of analysis and presentation technology. So I'll work with Larry on that. Changes over the major changes over the last 10 years, our chair mentioned the turnover in professional staff, and we expect some of that to continue. So we'll have to do some recruiting probably in the next few years. We've had to do some in the past. That's, of course, our key is the quality of our staff, and we need to make sure that they're trained and we get the best folks we can and that they have an opportunity to develop. Most all of our staff, I think we have a history of people staying a long time, which I think speaks real well for the organization, and it's something that we'd like to maintain.
Great. Any questions for Dr. Werner before we adjourn? Any comments from the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I am going to close the public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 5046, Legislative Branch Agencies. Remind the committee that we are not meeting tomorrow, and tomorrow is Thursday. And so our next meeting, hopefully, will be Monday at 8:30. Thank you all. We stand adjourned.